Welcome to the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast. This is the show for business owners in their 40s and 50s who desire two things: a business that serves the market strong, and number two, a life that allows them to finish strong with a great legacy. I'm your host, Scott Kochenour. Really honored that you're listening today. This is going to be a very powerful, pivotal conversation for you as a business owner. You've got to understand, there's one word I want you to keep in the back of your mind as you're listening to this post or this episode, and that is core, C-O-R-E. What is a core customer? We're going to talk about the difference between the core customer and target market, and why we don't go into the actual human being that we're selling, not the company. We tend to lean toward defining our market as the companies that we serve. Mark's going to turn that around and help you understand that it's much deeper than that, much more relational. And when you can identify your core customer, you identify your core business, and it touches on all of the drivers of value that we talk about so much in these podcasts of making your company thrive without you, giving you more options. Let me tell you a little bit about Mark. Mark is a renowned strategic advisor and leadership growth coach. He has aided CEOs and executive teams globally in achieving groundbreaking growth and success. He employs Gravitas, seven attributes of sustainable growth in his coaching, and leading to dynamic organizational changes and sustainable growth. Mark excels in developing strategies, refining growth platforms, and implementing scalable solutions for companies with revenues between 5 and 50 million. He's also a Vistage chair. He creates supportive peer environments for business leaders and C-suite executives, enhancing business marketability and facilitating smooth transitions. He boasts over 30 years of experience in strategic planning and mergers and acquisitions, having completed over 100 transactions worth $3 billion and worked in over 20 countries. That's why I'm so happy to have him on the show. Let's get into the conversation. Mark, it is a privilege to have you on the show today.
Thanks very much, Scott. I appreciate being here.
Well, let's talk about a topic that has a huge ramification on the value of a business, and that is the core customer and who they are and what is it about the core customer that makes a business better. First off, why does a company need to know its core customer?
Well, from my perspective, if you don't know your core customer, you can't actually do anything. You can't build a strategy. You can't differentiate yourself against your competition. You cannot create that differential advantage in value and performance. And everything you do is kind of tactical with no cohesion. And so, you know, if we go back to, I meet lots of companies and they're doing this and that. But when you understand who their core customer is, these activities don't seem to make any sense in the long term. So, you know, let me explain a bit and then we can get into it. So when I say, who is your core customer? To many companies, they'll say, oh, my core customer is company Y or company Z or, you know, Acme company. And I'm like, no, that's not your core customer. Your core customer, I want you to tell me the person. Is it Fred? Is it Laura? I want you to sit there, close your eyes, and tell me about the person who's buying. And what we end up with after a work of this is, you know, okay, I was doing this with a client just a couple of weeks ago. And she said, it's a woman in her late 50s, early 60s, is single. And so you start to actually get to know this person. And only then, when I say, okay, now we understand who your core customer is. What are their needs and wants? Why are they buying them? And, you know, there's the classic story is people will say to you, well, they're buying from me because they need a widget or they need a cleaner. Well, no, they don't. They're buying from you for some other deeper reason. And companies need to investigate this reason. Why is it they're truly buying from you? And there's a great story of a construction company that was selling townhomes. Couldn't sell them, had beautiful townhomes, couldn't sell them. Born a consultant, long story short, what the consultant noticed was everybody, they looked at their core customer. They said, we sell to divorcees and couples downsizing. That's our target market. So they knew who their target market was. They knew their price point, everything. And they still couldn't sell any, and they had reworked it. And this consultant listened, and he said, you know, what I keep hearing is people complain about the dining room table. And I don't know what this is about. And that weekend, his kids had a birthday party, and it was in Chicago, and it was cold, and he couldn't go out. And they were all sitting around the dining room table, and it suddenly hit him. He goes, that's where life happens. And when these people downsize, to give up their dining room table is to give up such a core part of their memories and their life. And so he went back to the company, and he said, what I think we need to do is make sure the dining room table can fit. What we should tell people is when they downsize, they're getting rid of many heirlooms. And Scott, you and I are probably dealing with this now. We've collected stuff throughout years that our kids don't want, but they mean a lot to us. So these people are having to let go of things that mean a lot emotionally. So this construction company said, okay, we'll move all your stuff. We will store anything you don't know what to do with for 2 years free. And they upped the price to cover the costs and make some profit. And they sold everything like hotcakes. And what they realized, we're not providing homes. We're providing life transition. So if you don't know who your core customer is, why they're truly buying from you, you don't know how to then differentiate yourself against everybody else who's out there. And so what I say is, okay, let's get your core customer. What is the problem you solve from them? What is your brand promise? Now you know what problem you're solving. Your brand promise can go straight to what that need is. And then finally, I say to my clients, all right, now let's look at you versus your competitor set and find that blue ocean within. They're not playing. And we can create competitive advantage. And then all our strategy is focused on widening that competitive advantage and keeping ahead of it. And so everything then aligns. And once you've done that, the company is aligned, the management team is aligned, and the employees aligned, and you're off to the races. Now, it sounds simple. It takes a lot of work to get there. And you have to keep working it. But, you know, another great example is a company I know, they did their core customer and they figured out that it was a mid-30 woman with three kids and housewife who was buying. This was a furniture company. So what they did was they figured out what she looked like, and they got a bunch of mannequins and dressed them up like this woman, and they gave her a name, Lisa. And they basically said, and they put one in every meeting room and on the main office floor. And they said, before they started any meeting, what are we doing to make her life better? Because if we're not making her life better, she's not buying from us. She doesn't care. We may have the greatest ERP system in the world. If it doesn't affect her interaction with the company, she doesn't care. And so that's why I believe the core customer is so vital. And from there, you can build everything.
You said it sounds easy, but it's not. What is it about defining your core customer that makes it so hard? Why is it such a long process for companies?
Well, I think the first thing is when you say, who's your core customer, people automatically go to who they want their core customer to be. So I've seen many cases where they'll say, oh, my core customer is the Fortune 500 company I supply to. Or my core customer is X company because they buy more. But when we dig into it, those companies often don't pay the best, especially if it's a Fortune 500. They're squeezing them on receivables. They're squeezing them on price. And so you need to look at your core customer and say, okay, one of the questions is, who allows you to make an optimal profit? And can you judge their behavior, whether it's online or in person? And so people have to get away from it's company X, but say, you know, I say, go back to who is that person? Tell me the name of that person. Let's build a composite of your top customers and tell me about Fred and John and Lisa and Mary. And let's try and figure out from an amalgamation of what they're, who they are, you know, age profile. And then we get into what are their needs and desires. What is it you want? Because if you can focus on the emotional need, you will outsell people. You know, there's a great saying somebody has said, and I can't give credit. I think his name was Sherman. Anyway, I can't remember his name. He's a coach. But he said, you know, nobody buys a Porsche because it goes from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. And, they buy it because it makes them feel good. When you ask them why they bought it, they'll tell you all the specs and around it. But they don't buy it because of that. We always buy on emotion. We then use all the data to justify the emotional decision because we don't want to sound stupid. But right. That's how it works. And so it's hard for people, especially in B2B world, to start to visualize that corporate customer.
I'm struck by the line of explanation here that has to do more with humans. And yes. B2B, B2C, it's always business. What is the business name? But what you're talking about is break the business down into the human beings who are buying.
Correct. Right?
And not so much the business that is benefited by your product, but the people who are doing the buying and how they. So could it be that you're, if a B2B business and you are trying to find your core target, your core market, you're looking to the person who's doing the buying on behalf of their company and what their emotional needs are and their demographics. Huh.
Because, you know, let's go back to the famous old line, you know, you don't get fired for buying IBM. And I always say to people, what that really means is, you know, and I've dealt with this with clients. They're like, we got this great service, technology product, whatever it is, and we're going to sell it to all these companies. And it's a disruptor. And I said, that's great. But if I'm Joe and I work in a large company and you come to me and you've got this thing and it's going to change everything in my organization, and you tell me everything wonderful it's going to do, I've got two options. I can stick with what I'm doing and I won't get fired. And I can buy your product. And if it works well, I might get a bonus. But if it goes bad, I am getting fired because this is key to his organization. And so that risk profile is so peculiar. Mm-hmm. And that's why people have a hard time breaking into these companies, because they're not looking at that person's emotions and needs in within their job. Like, why are they buying them? And so you've got to really work at this, and you got to take away that corporate facade. You know, I sell to GE, I sell to McDonald's. No, you're selling to a person. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, I always say to my clients when they're selling, you know, you got to build a relationship with quite a few people in the company in case your guy leaves, because there's always somebody.
Yeah.
And I know many companies, and I'm sure you have too, they have a great relationship with the customer. And then all of a sudden, the guy they have, or the woman they have the relationship with, leaves the company, and suddenly they have no relationship. And they can't understand why they're no longer buying any. But it's people. We're dealing with people.
Yeah. Now, what if your core customer, the decision makers, is a committee? Does that complicate things? How do you go about that?
It does, but I have very rarely seen a committee buy it. I mean, you know, even down to a board decision. I'm selling services to a board. Somebody on the board has brought you in. Mm-hmm. What you have to do is understand the person who's brought you in and is putting you up. What are their needs and desires? And how do I make them secure that they can then sell it to their people?
Right.
But it's always coming back to a human.
And I think if we could capitalize the main phrase, it's what you just said. For this episode, it's all about the human. It's the human. I heard a technique once that if you're in a room with a group and you are trying to understand who are the players, then you ask a question that everyone can answer, but you're not really looking for the answer to the question. What you're doing is you're observing the reactions of the rest of the people as each person talks. And if one person is talking, everybody looks down. Well, that's not a person who is really influential. But if, you know, another person starts talking, everybody looks at them. Okay, there's the human in the room that you need to find out more about, right?
Right. And we don't spend enough time.
Yeah. So let's break this down a little bit. We're talking about the core customer, the human being. When I was listening to you, I'm making notes here and I'm saying, okay, demographics, psychographics, emotional needs, their needs and wants. Is there a list of things that you're looking for in a core customer?
So I start out with what you pointed out, the characteristics. But what I start with is they pay me on time. They allow me to make an optimal profit. They refer me to other people. Those are the people I want to start looking at and then define those behaviors within them and their needs and their wants. But I'm not starting with the blank canvas. I'm going to profile who is best for me. You know, I may have a big customer, but if they don't pay me 90 or 120 days, I don't care.
Okay. Okay.
They don't refer me to anybody and they keep squeezing me on price. Do I really want that custom?
Right. Right. So you take a look at your current book of business.
Correct.
And you go to the human level of your best customers, the ones that you love to serve, and they bring out the best in you and you bring out the best in them. And it's just, and we've all had that. I mean, I have certain clients and popped in my head. So you start there. And for not to sound crass, but you're analyzing them.
Yes.
You're saying, what is it about them? And then you then build a profile of who you look for in the future. right?
Correct. And, you know, as I said to you before, once we've identified them and what problem we solve for them and our brand promise, then we put all our marketing activities and sales effort into finding people like that. Now, as I tell my customers, my clients, if somebody you've never met who doesn't fit their profile walks in the door and places a big order, you don't chase them away.
Right.
You take them, and that is great.
Yeah.
But let's focus our efforts on those people we know meet our needs. And, you know, and what I see is people don't really know their core customers. So they're doing a shotgun attack on the market, but they don't really know the needs that they're trying to solve for their clients. So they don't understand why people buy. They can't offer them a brand promise. You know, one of the things I struggle with clients is, what is your brand promise? We offer the best service. You know, everybody offers the best service. I can show you a million companies that claim that. Nobody says we offer the worst. But in the law of averages, somebody's offering the worst. So, you know, it has to be quantifiable. It has to be measurable. But you can't measure it and quantify it unless you know it. And they don't know it. So they just say things like, we offer the best service, which doesn't mean anything. So you can get away with that. And then you can truly differentiate yourself from your competitors who aren't doing that. And once you've got that, it goes back to your original question, Scott. When a buyer walks in and says to anybody in the company, who do you sell to? And they can say, I sell to this type of person. This is their needs and wants. This is why we deliver this brand promise. This is how we beat our competition. Your value just went up sixfold. This doesn't come into multiples. This is because as the market changes, you are ahead of it because you know how to take care of those people. I mean, I'll give you a really simple example on the personal side. During COVID, I was telling all my clients, you know, find your top five customers that you are good with. And you need to call the CEO of every one of them and say, hey, I'm not calling to sell you anything. I'm calling you a CEO to CEO. How are you doing? Are you okay? I said, we are so busy doing deals and transactions that we don't stop to ask people things like that. And if you do that with your top customers, I tell you, you will build a relationship that will last another generation because nobody else is asking how they do.
Yeah, just coming alongside and saying, hey, we're doing work together, but look, how are you doing as a person? How are things going? Yeah, and that sets you apart quite dramatically because I can't think of anybody who would normally naturally do that. They're just focused on customer satisfaction, you know, and customer service, which kind of leads me to, you know, value builder. If we were to just take what you've talked about so far, we would think that this is a marketing podcast. This is all about marketing, but there is a method to the madness of this conversation, and that is in the value builder system. And you can look that up. Those of you who are listening wondering, what in the world is about value builder? Well, the value builder system has identified 8 drivers of value in a business. And when you are good on all 8, then a couple of things happen. Number one, the chances of a higher multiple increase because buyers are looking for companies with these values. Secondly, even if you're not going to sell, the company thrives without you, giving you more freedom. And those of us who are approaching 60, 70, we need to have options, right? We can't, we don't have the 30-year-old energy that we used to have.
Right.
So that is a backdrop. What I'm hearing here is when I can clearly, as a business owner, I can clearly define the core customer and starting with my best customers and working my way out to the future in my marketing efforts directly addresses 2, maybe more, but 2 drivers of value. One being financial performance,
yep,
right off the bat, and secondly, customer satisfaction.
So you've got a couple of things. As you mentioned, customer satisfaction goes up and your NPS score should go up. Your financial performance goes up because you're selling to people who allow you to make an optimal profit.
Right.
But the other point I made is they pay you on time. So your cash flow teeter-totter is improving. Also,
right,
you're meeting the customer's needs and wants, which doesn't relate to you as the owner selling to them. This is no longer about you. This is about what your organization provides. So you start to separate yourself from the customer, and the organization can do it without you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that creates a more sellable company. You can document this stuff. I mean, it filters through the whole thing, and each one of those is increasing value.
That's correct. And it's funny, we use the word core customer. Take customer out. We're talking about something that is core to your business.
Yes.
Not just core to the customers, but
right,
core to the business. It's fascinating. Why do you think that we are so inclined to think target market? as opposed to core customer?
Because it's not easy, and we're dealing with things that are squishy, and business doesn't like that. I mean, the first time I came across this was a company in Europe in the early 2000s who had gone through this whole revolution, changed their entire business model to suit their core customer. And they sold two times the multiple of any company in their market ever. And, you know, this wasn't a technology company. This was a manufacturing company that sold pretty complex manufacturing pieces, but it was a manufacturing company. But everybody in the entire company could tell you who the core customer was and what they did to satisfy them. And, you know, again, they had identified him down to the name. They knew him. You know, they sold 90% of their sales were to males, certain demographics, certain location. Their people did door-to-door sales in the end because they said, we know exactly who we're selling to. We don't even need inventory. They had no inventory. They kind of did a Dell model. You buy, we'll build, and got rid of their receivables. I mean, you can do so much when you know who that person is. And we don't do that because we see a huge market out there. Well, you don't want me to segment this. I'm going to not approach the best person. I don't know who the best person is. Why don't we look at who you're selling to now? Once we find their needs and wants, we can find other people who have the same needs and wants, and then we can sell to them. But you got to start there. But we don't like that. You know, one of my favorite lines is, I keep hiring employees and people show up. We don't want to deal with the squishy stuff. You know, that's HR, which I always laugh about because having worked in big America and most small companies, HR falls under the CFO, who is the most non-emotion empathy guy there is. He's a finance guy. But we don't want to deal with those things. And dealing with them is hard. And, you know, it's not something that you sit down and in 5 minutes, everybody's worked out who the core customer is. You go through the data, you analyze it, you challenge yourself. It may take you 6 months to figure it out. And that's the investment of time and meetings. And everybody's in a rush. We're in a rush. Let's just keep going with what we're doing. And so we're going for stuff, but we don't really know why. And then there are those companies out there that are just killing this. For instance, you know, I see this a lot with tech companies. They build the next greatest widget, but they don't know who their core customers are going to sell it to. And I think one of the greatest examples of that was Segway. I mean, if you remember when Segway was coming out, everybody raged. It was going to technically change the world. Mm-hmm. But they never figured out who's going to buy it. Why would anybody want this thing? If you can't tell me a need and a want that it meets, I'm not buying it. It can be the greatest thing. There are a few people who buy for the fun of it, but nobody really buys.
I'm thinking about the manufacturing industry, the industrial age. Had come along with it, there was this idea of hard skill and soft skill, or hard parts of work and the soft parts. And the soft was the emotional human side of things. HR was always a soft element to the business. I don't know if it's done on purpose or not, but we get that idea that when we talk about human beings, that's the soft part of work, as though it's the lesser. You know, it's the subordinate, and the important stuff is the widget. You know, look what this widget can do, right? That's the hard part of, in other words, the meaningful part of business. And, you know, the emotions of your buyers, that's the little stuff in the back. Maybe that contributes to the difficulty that we have as business owners trying to identify our core customer.
Right.
And we hide behind the target market speak because that's, you know, we just aren't inclined to do the soft stuff.
Right. Because it doesn't feel right. And we've kind of, as you said, we've kind of treated it like the poor cousin. We don't want to go mix there. We want to work on our process and our service delivery and all this other stuff. But if we're working on all that and we don't know why our customer's buying, we're chasing, you know, we're tilting at windmills with no idea where this payoff's coming.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, those of you listening, as a business owner, you're considering an exit, you're considering some sort of option to do with your business. It starts with having a very strong business that can thrive without you, whether you exit or not. And what Mark has pointed out is the key to that process is to understand your core customer, and underline the word core. Because core doesn't just reflect the customer themselves, but the core to the business. Because you can impact multiple drivers of value when you identify your core customer. Invest in the time it takes to get to that understanding. One last question before I let you go. What do you say to the person who's listening, who gets the idea? Okay, I'm going to look at a couple of my greatest customers, and I'm going to go through this and find out what's their risk tolerance. Why are they buying from me? And what are their needs and their wants? But I'm afraid that if I do all that and I get that profile, there's another really good customer out there that doesn't have those same those same needs and wants. Do you just go with this anyway and then augment as you go?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know, what I would say with most companies is you start out, you work on it. After a while, I would bring in a market research firm to confirm your beliefs because we buy our own bias.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you're focused on your core customer and you're meeting the needs and wants and your brand promise is working, you know, if there's another customer out there that you think you can sell to and you can identify their needs and wants and they'll meet the same criteria, great. But don't chase them for the wrong reasons. And I can give you two examples. A company, it was a trucking transportation company in Texas that I worked with. They were chasing whales all the time. And when we did this analysis, it turned out it wasn't the whales that were making the money. It was the middle-sized companies. And we could manage to build it down. It was a demographic. They were mid-sized, family-owned. We could really get into it. And so we basically said, we're not chasing whales anymore. If a whale shows up and is willing to pay our price and meet our terms, we'll take their business.
Mm-hmm.
But our sales guys, don't even go after them. Let them come to us. Focus on these guys. We can build a data list. We can try. Sales just went up because we met their needs. Another one of my clients had same situation. We went through his analysis. He had a huge client. It was his first client, gave him a great deal. And his contract was up for renewal. And he said, you know, I can't offer them that price. And I said, well, they're not paying you a price that lets you make a profit. They're not a core customer. We should let them go. It's like, I can't let them go. They're 30% of my revenue. And we did the analysis. And if we let them go and we cut the headcount and everything else related to them, his profit doubled. And I'm like, what do you want? Do you want a lot of revenue or do you want to make money?
Right. Because behind all of that is opportunity cost.
Correct.
Opportunity loss. And so you're spending 30% on something that isn't generating a lot of business. You cut that out, you free yourself up to pursue the ones that...
You know, I think for anybody who's listening, and I've been in this trap, I plead that I was guilty as anything. I ran my own company. You know, I would do anything anybody asked me because I needed revenue. Then there's no focus. I could never differentiate myself. And it took me a long time to figure out, no, turn business away. If it doesn't fit, turn it away and focus on where you can deliver that promise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you get referred. That's the best thing you want.
That's correct. That's correct. That's great. Before I let you go, let's talk about you a little bit. You're a Vistage chair, right? You've got some experience in the value builder system as well. You're
correct.
An advisor.
Yeah.
Where, if there's a listener who has resonated with what you're doing and talking about, and they want to contact you, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Well, it's my website, and it's, I'm going to have to spell it out because unfortunately I have one of those long foreign names, but it's MarcBorelli.com is the website, MarcBorelli.com, and it's two R's and two L's.
Okay. Okay.
You can find me on that website. You can message me through it, and that would be a great way to reach me.
I tell you what, we'll put that in the show notes as well. So,
thank you so much.
Mark, this has been a pleasure. You have opened up, for the listener who takes you serious, you've just opened up great possibilities for much more value and more options for business owners as they age. I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on, Scott. I really enjoyed it.
This has been another episode of the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast. Here are your next steps. Number one, subscribe to the show. That way you'll be notified of upcoming episodes. Number two, share this show with a colleague. The show is dedicated to mature business owners who want a great company and a personal great legacy. Number three, visit servingstrong.com/pod, that's P-O-D, for more details on what to do with the episodes. It's a place for you to dive just a little deeper on the topics that matter most to you. Thank you so much for listening. And until next time, here's to your business serving the market strong, and here's to you personally finishing strong. This has been another episode of the Serve Strong, Finish Strong podcast. I take your time very seriously. Therefore, my pledge is to continue bringing you information and insight you need to be successful in your adventure as you finish strong. Be sure to check the show notes for the information related in this episode. Subscribe to be notified when new shows drop and leave a review if you're so inclined. I'll talk to you next time.